Hello, everyone. This is Krista Gibson with New Spirit Journal, and my guest today is Priscilla Long, who is a writer, poet, and teacher, and she just came out with a book called Minding the Muse, a handbook for painters, composers, writers, and other creators. Welcome, Priscilla.
Thank you. Welcome to you.
So you've written poetry and creative nonfiction, fiction, history, and science. It's like you have a really unique body of work. So I'm curious, kind of how did you get your writing career going and how did it morph into what you're doing today?
Well, I always had dreamed of being a writer, and early on I began writing pretty much every day. And of course, if you dream of being an artist, what do? You make art.
And my first book
was actually a history of coal mining in the United States. I worked for many years on it, and it's a nice book, and it was published. Because that book took so much research and so much time, and at the time I was working as a printer, it wasn't as though someone was supporting me while I was doing this research. So I could not bear the thought of giving up writing poetry and writing other things. And so that's how I evolved into a writer who wrote many different kinds of things. And the different genres that I work in, they all resonate off each other. Mm-hmm. So what happens is that early on, if you are working in various different genres, one subtracts from another in the sense of the, you know, world of publishing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But as it evolves and you have more and more achievements and you're able to do more and more, in fact, they start helping each other.
Right.
So I think at this point, that's what has happened.
That makes a lot of sense. I do have to jump in with one question because I realize that I'm sure a listener is going to think this. How did you write a book about the history of coal mining? I mean, that's such an unusual topic.
Well, because I didn't know what I was doing, that's one reason I wrote that book. I had no idea how much research it would involve. But anyway, I'm glad I did it. I've never regretted a minute of it. But I became interested in a very interesting labor organizer by the name of Mother Jones. And you might have heard of her. And she organized coal miners. And so I decided, I will write a biography of Mother Jones, not having the slightest idea what I was doing, which none of us really do when we start out writing a book, especially a first book. So that's okay. Who knows what they're doing? No one.
That's right.
There's very little known about Mother Jones, and there's virtually nothing known even to this day. There's virtually nothing known about her before she was 60 years old, and it just became frustrating. And there was no inner life. There was no way to have any idea what she really thought. She told different stories about her life, and she was an interesting, very, very interesting figure. But gradually, I got more and more drawn into actually writing about her people, coal miners and coal mining. And so that's how I got sucked into that. It's a fascinating subject because coal was the basis of industrialization in this country. So it really covers a lot. And I visited all the coal fields and various archives all over the country over the years. And so it was fun.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Really different. You know, it reminds me I wanted to talk about your current book, so I'm Minding the Muse. And one of the chapters I was going to talk about, which I think really relates to what you just mentioned, is the one called Gathering, Hoarding, and Conceptualizing. If you could talk about those concepts a minute, because I would imagine that in doing the book about coal mining, you had to do a lot of gathering, hoarding, and conceptualizing. How does that apply to the creative life in as a general statement?
Well, it's like this. When one is starting out on a given project, a given painting, a given body of work, creativity studies have shown that artists who keep the problem open for a long time come out with better works. In other words, rather than rushing toward the goal, oh, I want this to be great, oh, I hope this will be really successful, that's not the best way to get the best work. The best way is to spend a lot of time. Now, it depends on your genre of art, but for example, when I'm a writer, of course, and when I'm starting a new piece now, I have a scrapbook, and I will start listing words that relate. You know, I will start cutting out pictures from magazines, putting in photographs, old photographs that I might have, and I'll just spend quite a bit of time mulling about, and it feels inefficient, but actually it's not inefficient. Mm-hmm. And at this stage, I believe it's important to not think about the audience, to not think about your critique group, or any of that, but you're relating to the actual material that you're working with, mm-hmm. and the actual subject matter. So there is a relationship and a dynamic that's built up, that's building up, and is evolving between the work and the artist. So, and the work is giving you back. Mm-hmm. So the work is actually giving you suggestions, and then of course there are accidents and so on. And I will say that the stage of mulling and gathering we shouldn't do research for many years or many months or many weeks without starting to write, mm-hmm, at the same time.
Right.
So we're doing both of these at the same time, because mm-hmm. otherwise we'll just do our scrapbook forever.
And instead of writing, we're scrapbooking.
That's right.
No, actually, the way that you describe it, both verbally and in the book, to me, it feels like a really rich process, because yes. It feels more multidimensional, whether you're doing art or writing or music, whatever. It just feels like it's like you're wrapping your arms around a whole lot of aspects of whatever you're creating. And then it comes together as whatever the finished product might be. So to me, yes. It feels really rich.
Yeah, I think it's very rich. And I know, I've studied, I'm not a visual artist, but I have studied visual artists, and I love the visual arts, and so for years. And it is true that there are abstract artists who draw every day, which is very interesting to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, draw apples.
Right, right.
Draw, you know, the person in front of them. They would never, that does not appear in their work.
Right.
But it's a process of accumulating, you know, color, line, and all that.
Right.
And a process of learning to see, and a process of seeing. And so as a writer, we do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, I mean, we're looking, we're gathering. So poetry, for instance, is a form of music in some ways, mm-hmm. and so we're gathering sounds and words and images and colors and stories. It's very rich,
mm-hmm.
and it's fun.
It is. And one thing you commented on, well, you did the whole first chapter about learning to work, and you know, because I think there is a temptation, and it kind of fits in with what you were just saying, there is a temptation to read a lot about writing. Let's take a writer. Read a lot about writing, do research on writing, talk to other writers, but not sit down and write. And so one of the things that you talked about is doing whatever your craft is, you have to sit down and do it. So can you talk about that a bit? Because I know this is an issue for all sorts of artists, is avoiding doing what it is that you love to do.
Yeah, I think that I'm pretty strong on the idea of working every day. And working every day means often because of our circumstances. I mean, sometimes we have full-time jobs and we're raising children and all this. So how can you work every day? I think it means reducing the amount of time that you think you need in order to do any work. And so, therefore, anyone can work for 15 minutes. Anyone can work for a half an hour, actually, pretty much. And you've got 24, usually. Most days we have 24. And there are artists, for example, I like to think about Barbara Hepworth, who was the great English sculptor, and this is an earlier generation, but she had, during World War II, and they were in Great Britain, in England, and she had a son who was, I think, 10 or 11 years old, and then she had triplets, and then London was being bombed, and so they were living somewhere out away from London, and they had to actually grow the food. I mean, that's how you got food during those years. You grew it in the garden. So she had all of this to do, and plus she was caring for other children. So her whole day was taken up with these duties and responsibilities that she had to do, and yet she worked every day for 15 or 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I think what it does is, and then on other days, I mean, you'll get more time. It's not like that. You might get 2 hours one day,
right?
Or you might get a whole day one day. But if you do think about the practice of doing it every day, first of all, you're kind of stirring your little unconscious mind with your work, and it keeps working on your work, and you're maintaining that thread with what you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, when you do get more time, you're not suddenly, oh wait, where was I?
Right,
And then you are an artist, or you are a writer. If you're doing it every day, you are a writer.
Correct.
And then it evolves from that. If you only do it when you have time, or when things look good, or especially when you're inspired,
mm-hmm.
Then you know,
right.
You know, that's a lottery. That doesn't work. Actually, doesn't really work. So the idea of working every day as a habit, not as something you have to make yourself do, but just this is my habit. I brush my teeth every day, and I do my at least 15 to 20 to a half an hour of my work. And the other thing that helps in doing this is to have a place, some sort of place, where it's not filled, even if it's just the corner of a room, where it's not filled with bills and,
right.
and other stuff, things you must do, appointments, calls you must make, that it's cleared and mm-hmm. there's nothing there except for the work, your creative work. And that's very helpful too, especially
right.
if you can leave it out.
Right.
And so then just sit. And the other tool here is a timer.
Mm.
If you can just set a timer, okay, I'm going to work now for 20 minutes. And the timer is like this wall that is surrounding and protecting you
mm-hmm.
for that 20 minutes. And so I think those practices are very helpful in helping you to create a body of work
right.
that ends up being really substantial.
Yeah, one of the things that I like about I liked a lot of things about your book, Minding the Muse. One of the things I really appreciated was that it's clear you have read and studied a lot about creativity, you know, as well as doing it yourself. You quote other people in the book, you give other resources that you've read or things like that. And so what this book gives to somebody, it truly is a handbook because it really covers so many of the issues that a creative person faces. You know, it's really a book about creativity, you know,
whatever
you are. And so it's like dipping into that, especially if you're stuck. It could be a great way, you know, to visit with somebody who's being a creative like you're trying to be. So it's really, you must have, I guess where I'm going with a question in this is, you must have already done a lot of reading and studying on creativity as you were going along honing your skills.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was desperate for help. And so so where did I go? Where did I turn for help? Mostly, well, let's see. I think I actually got my MFA, my Master of Fine Arts, in 1990. And shortly after that, I started turning to the lives of artists and to creativity studies. There are many, many, at this point, there are many creativity studies, studies of artists and studies of creative people. Like, what do they do versus what someone who is not less creative potentially, but who doesn't do the work to make this work that is recognized. And it's remarkable how many common habits these different creators have.
Right.
And that is really remarkable. Mm-hmm. And they just come up over and over. And one of them, of course, is working every day.
Right.
And that doesn't mean it's universal. It doesn't mean every single major artist in the world works every day, but maybe 99% comes in. So, and other qualities and habits and practices. I've studied, I'm still studying it, but I studied it for probably about 26 years now. And I love to learn more. And also, whenever I make any discovery, I try to apply it to my own practice.
Right, right, and so try it out.
Really selfish.
Yeah, then you know if it works or not.
Yeah.
So you teach and you do workshops. Can you tell us more about that and what are you doing now? And do you do one-on-one mentoring if someone is interested in that? Kind of tell us what you're doing professionally.
Well, I teach different kinds of things. My main teaching is in creative nonfiction and fiction, which I teach in the same type, in the same class. And we generate works. And we study technique and craft extensively. So syntax, and for example, we study different kinds of sentences. Here's an example. If you have a scene and it's very tense, there's a technique which is to shape the prose so it enacts the meaning as well as says the meaning. So if you have a very tense scene, think of writing as a muscle. And when you tense your muscle, the muscle gets shorter.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are writing a tense scene, the prose, the words are shorter and the sentences get shorter, mm-hmm. and the paragraphs get shorter and sharper.
Mm-hmm.
And so that type of technique, whereas if you're flowing along like a river drifting along, it's the opposite. So we work on those types of technical strategies a lot, but then also generate work. So that's one type of class. I occasionally do teach a poetry class, and I also teach classes in becoming a more effective creator, actually. So, for example, in Bellingham on, I think it's Saturday the 29th of October, I'm going to teach one of those at Village Books. So I teach that type of thing occasionally also.
So how do people get in touch with you to find out more? You have a website and do
yes,
you have
I have
classes?
A website. The classes fill very fast. I'm also, and so keep keep your eagle eye on my website, and you can also email me. I'm easy to contact. The classes are hard to get into sometimes, but some aren't. I think I'm gonna be teaching at Centrum this summer,
okay.
up in Port Townsend, and so that class will be open. I mean, I don't think it's announced yet, but I will be there, and it'll be open. And so there are opportunities, and keep your eye on my website.
And your website is what?
PriscillaLong.com. You do have to know how to spell Priscilla.
I was going to say. Which is P-R-I-S-C-I-L-L-A.
Long.com.
And so if people go there, they can find out what you're doing, how to get in touch with you.
Absolutely.
Email you, whatever they want to do. So, well, our time is up, but thank you so much. We covered a lot in a little bit of time, and I really encourage my listeners to get your book. And there's another one I'm going to get called The Writer's Portable Mentor, A Guide to Art, Craft, and the Writing Life. So you have other books out as well that will be interested to our readers.
Yes, thank you. And there's another new book out, actually, just coming out. It's not quite here. It's called Fire and Stone. Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going?
Oh, neat.
A collection of essays. It's coming out from University of Georgia Press. So
fantastic.
You can get that one, too.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you for your time, Priscilla, and I wish you continued success.
Thank you so much.
Okay.